The tests confirm it. You are with child.
Your Grace, Dr. Shepherd said quietly, setting down his instruments with deliberate care. You are with child. The room tilted. Rebecca's breath caught somewhere between her throat and her heart. Her fingers tightened against the fabric of her gown, crushing the emerald silk beneath trembling hands. For 3 unbearable years, she had endured the weight of failure pressing down on her shoulders like iron chains. 3 years of pitying glances from servants who once curtsied with genuine respect. 3 years of cruel whispers behind jeweled fans at every ball, every dinner, every public appearance. Baron. That single word had followed her through marble hallways and candlelit drawing rooms. It clung to her skin like smoke. The noble women of London society spoke it with false sympathy, dripping from painted lips. Of the family council spoke it with cold calculation, during meetings she was not invited to attend. And Ronald, her husband, the powerful Duke of Blackthorn, he had stopped speaking to her at all. But now everything would change. Are you certain? Rebecca whispered, her voice barely audible above the rain hammering against the windows. Dr. Shepherd nodded, his weathered face softening with something that looked almost like relief. Completely certain, Your Grace. You are approximately 8 weeks along. Rebecca closed her eyes. Relief flooded through her body with such force that she feared she might collapse right there on the embroidered chair. Her hand moved instinctively to her stomach, pressing against the flat plane of silk and whalebone corseting. Beneath all those layers of fabric and propriety, a child was growing. Ronald's child. The heir that Blackthorn Hall had prayed for since the day she became Duchess. Thank you, she managed, rising to her feet with effort. Her legs felt unsteady, her heart racing with something she hadn't felt in years. Hope. Dr. Shepherd opened the door for her, and Rebecca stepped into the dimly lit corridor. The storm outside made the interior of Blackthorn Hall feel darker than usual, despite the candles flickering in their brass sconces along the walls. Shadows danced across portraits of former dukes and duchesses who stared down at her with painted eyes that seemed to judge everything. Rebecca walked quickly, her silk skirts rustling against the polished floors. She passed servants who bowed and curtsied, but she barely registered their presence, or her entire focus was fixed on reaching Ronald's study at the far end of the east wing. She imagined his face when she told him, the shock first, then disbelief, then finally that smile she had not seen in so long. He would hold her again. Really hold her. The way he used to, before, the pressure of producing an heir had poisoned everything between them. He would press his forehead against hers and whisper her name with that tenderness that once made her believe she was the luckiest woman in England. They would finally become the family she had dreamed of. Rebecca turned the corner into the corridor that led to Ronald's private study. Warm light spilled from beneath the closed door. He was still awake, probably reviewing estate ledgers or correspondence from the House of Lords. She quickened her pace, her heart hammering against her ribcage with anticipation. But as she reached for the door handle, voices drifted through the heavy oak. Female voices. Rebecca froze, her hand suspended in midair. You must face reality, Ronald. That was Lady Edith Wells, Ronald's mother. Her voice carried the sharp authority of a woman who had ruled Blackthorn Hall long before Rebecca arrived. 3 years without an heir. The family council grows impatient. I am aware of their impatience, mother. Ronald's voice sounded exhausted, hollow. Then you must act. A third voice joined the conversation. Smooth, cultured, beautiful. Countess Cecilia Osborne. Rebecca's fingers tightened against her skirts. Cecilia had been a constant presence at Blackthorn Hall in recent months, and attending dinners and social events with the kind of ease that suggested she belonged there. "It is not Rebecca's fault," Ronald said, but his voice lacked conviction. "Of course it is not her fault," Lady Edith replied with false sympathy that made Rebecca's stomach turn. "The poor girl cannot help her condition. But you are a duke, Ronald. Your duty is to this estate, to the Wells bloodline, to England itself. You cannot build a legacy on sentiment." Silence stretched between the words. Rebecca stood frozen in the corridor, one hand pressed against the doorframe to steady herself. She should leave. She should turn around and return to her chambers and pretend she had never heard this conversation. But her feet refused to move. "Dr. Harrington's report was quite clear," Cecilia said softly. "Rebecca's condition is permanent. She will never bear children." Rebecca's heart stopped. Dr. Harrington. She had never met any physician by that name. Dr. Shepherd had been the only doctor to examine her, and he had just confirmed she was carrying a child. "The report could be wrong," Ronald said, but doubt crept into his tone like frost spreading across glass. "Medical science does not lie, darling." Cecilia's voice dripped with poison, disguised as concern. "You have given Rebecca every opportunity. You have been patient beyond measure. But a duke cannot build a dynasty on a barren wife." The word struck Rebecca like a physical blow. Barren. Her hand moved instinctively to her stomach, where Ronald's children were growing. Twins, perhaps, if the unusually strong symptoms meant anything. Or the heirs he believed would never exist were already forming inside her body while he stood in his study discussing her failure. "She deserves happiness," Cecilia continued, her voice taking on a gentle, persuasive quality, "away from the pressure and scrutiny of aristocratic life, somewhere peaceful, where she can live without the constant reminder of what she cannot provide. It would be a kindness, truly." "You speak as if I should send my wife away," Ronald said, but the fight had drained from his voice. "I speak as someone who cares deeply for both of you," Cecilia replied. "Rebecca is suffering here, Ronald. Anyone can see it. The whispers, the judgment, the weight of expectation crushing her spirit day after day. Would it not be merciful to release her from this burden?" Rebecca closed her eyes. Marcecilia's manipulation was so skilled, so carefully constructed, that it sounded almost reasonable, almost kind. "And what of Blackthorn?" Lady Edith's voice cut through the false sympathy like a blade. "What of the Wells name? What of your duty to provide heirs? You cannot wait forever, Ronald. You are 32 years old. Time is not on your side." Thunder rolled across the sky, shaking the windows. "The family council has already discussed alternatives," Lady Edith continued. "Discreet alternatives that would preserve everyone's dignity. Rebecca could be provided for generously. A comfortable estate in the countryside. Financial security for life. And you could fulfill your obligations to the duchy without the scandal of a public divorce." Rebecca's breath came in shallow gasps, her vision blurred with tears she refused to let fall. But they were planning her exile, discussing the dissolution of her marriage as if she were a failed business investment rather than a human being who had loved Ronald with every piece of her heart. "I cannot simply send her away," Ronald said, but his resistance sounded weak. "Tired." "You can," Cecilia said gently. "You must. For her sake as much as yours. She will never find peace here, Ronald. Every day she remains at Blackthorn Hall is another day of torture for her. Let her go. Let her find happiness elsewhere." Silence filled the study. Rebecca waited, her entire body trembling. She waited for Ronald to defend her, to rage against the suggestion, to declare that he loved his wife and would hear no more of this cruel scheming. Instead, he spoke four words that shattered her world completely. "Send her away before morning." The corridor spun. Rebecca stumbled backward, her shoulder hitting the wall with enough force to bruise. She pressed her hand against her mouth to stifle the sob rising in her throat. Her other hand remained on her stomach, protecting the children that Ronald would never know existed. She could not breathe, could not think. The walls of Blackthorn Hall closed in around her like a coffin. Footsteps approached the study door. Rebecca forced herself to move. She walked quickly back down the corridor, her vision blurred with unshed tears. She passed a maid carrying fresh linens and somehow managed to nod politely. Training took over when the heart failed. Duchesses did not collapse in hallways. They did not scream or rage or break down in public spaces. They suffered beautifully. But Rebecca reached her chambers and closed the door with careful quietness. For a long moment, she simply stood in the center of the room, staring at nothing. The fire in the hearth had burned down to glowing embers. Shadows pooled in the corners like spilled ink. Then her legs gave out. She sank to the floor in a cascade of emerald silk, her hands pressed against the thick carpet to keep herself upright. The tears came finally, silent and devastating. They fell onto the fabric of her gown and disappeared into the dark green, like blood soaking into earth. Ronald was sending her away. After 3 years of marriage, after all the promises whispered in darkness, after every moment of joy and intimacy they had shared, he was simply discarding her, throwing her out like refuse because she had failed to produce an heir quickly enough. And he had no idea that the heirs he desperately wanted were already growing inside her. Rebecca's hands moved to her stomach again, pressing against the place where new life was forming. She should tell him. She should march back to that study and reveal the truth. Show him Dr. Shepherd's confirmation. Prove that all of Cecilia's manipulation and Lady Edith's scheming was built on lies. But the words he had spoken echoed in her mind like bells tolling for the dead. A duke cannot build a dynasty on a barren wife. He had believed them so easily, had accepted their forged medical reports without question, had listened to Cecilia's poison and nodded along like a man too tired to fight. He had not defended Rebecca, had not demanded proof, had not trusted the woman he had once sworn to love and protect above all others. And that betrayal cut deeper than exile ever could. Rebecca stood slowly, her body moving with mechanical precision. She walked to her writing desk and pulled out a sheet of cream-colored stationery embossed with the Wells family crest. She dipped her pen in ink and began to write. The letter was cold, controlled. Every word carefully chosen to inflict no additional pain and reveal no additional truth. "My dearest Ronald, I have come to understand that my presence at Blackthorn Hall brings you only sorrow and disappointment. I cannot give you what you need most, an heir to carry forward the Wells legacy. This failure has poisoned our marriage beyond repair. I release you from your obligations to me. I will leave Blackthorn Hall before morning and will not return. Please do not search for me. I ask only that you remember me with kindness, if you remember me at all. May you find the happiness and legacy you deserve. Rebecca." She folded the letter with steady hands and sealed it with wax. Then she placed it on Ronald's side of the bed, where he would find it when he finally came to their chambers. If he came at all, Rebecca moved through her rooms like a ghost, gathering only what she could carry. A few dresses, some personal items, the pearl necklace her mother had given her before she died. She left behind all the expensive gowns, all the jewels Ronald had gifted her, all the trappings of Duchess life. she took only one item of sentiment. Hidden at the bottom of her jewelry box was a simple ribbon, pale blue silk that Ronald had tied in her hair during their wedding ceremony. She had kept it all these years, even when everything else between them had turned cold, even when hope seemed impossible. Rebecca tucked the ribbon into her travel bag and closed the clasp. Rain still hammered against the windows when she slipped out of her chambers near midnight. The servants had retired for the evening. The corridors were empty and dark, except for the occasional candle burning in its sconce. Rebecca moved through Blackthorn Hall like a shadow, descending the grand staircase for the last time. She paused at the bottom of the stairs, looking up at the massive portrait of Ronald that hung in the entrance hall. He looked powerful in the painting, commanding. The artist had captured something in his eyes that suggested both strength and gentleness. Rebecca had fallen in love with that combination. She turned away and walked out into the rain. Not the stablemaster, old Dennis Flynn, was waiting with a small carriage, as she had quietly requested earlier that evening. He asked no questions, simply helped her into the covered seat and secured her bag. His weathered face showed only concern. "Where to, Your Grace?" he asked softly. "Anywhere far from here," Rebecca replied. The carriage rolled forward, wheels crunching on gravel. Rebecca looked back at Blackthorn Hall one final time. Light still glowed in Ronald's study window. He was probably still in there with Cecilia and Lady Edith, finalizing the details of her removal. He had no idea she was already gone, and he had no idea that she carried his sons, because somehow Rebecca knew, deep in her bones, that the children growing inside her were boys. Strong boys with their father's dark eyes and stubborn pride. Now boys who would never know their father believed them impossible. The carriage turned onto the main road, and Blackthorn Hall disappeared into the darkness behind her. Rebecca placed both hands over her stomach and whispered into the rain-soaked night, "You will never know them, but I will love them enough for both of us." Thunder cracked across the sky like the sound of a world breaking in half. The coastal town of Whitfield existed on the edge of England like an afterthought. No grand estate rose from its rolling hills. No aristocratic families gathered for elaborate balls or garden parties. It was simply a place where the sea met the land, where fishermen hauled in daily catches, and where merchants sold wool and grain without ceremony. It was also the place where Rebecca Foster learned to survive without a title, for the cottage she rented sat on a cliff overlooking the grey waters of the Channel. Small and practical, it possessed none of the luxury she had known at Blackthorn Hall. The floors were unpolished wood instead of marble. The windows were simple glass instead of leaded crystal. The furniture had been built by local craftsmen rather than imported from France. But it was hers. Rebecca stood at the window, 7 months after fleeing London, watching storm clouds gather on the horizon. Her body had changed dramatically. The children, Dr. Marion Cross had confirmed during an examination last month, had transformed her shape completely. Her abdomen had swelled beneath her simple cotton dresses. Her face had filled out slightly, softening the sharp angles that stress and heartbreak had carved into her features, and she looked like someone learning to live again. "The rain will come heavy tonight," Maggie Stevens said from the doorway. The older woman who served as midwife, housekeeper, and unexpected friend carried an armful of clean linens into the cottage. "Best prepare, my lady. Babies often arrive during storms." Rebecca had long since stopped correcting Maggie's use of "my lady." The woman knew Rebecca had come from aristocratic life, though she asked no questions about the specific circumstances. In Whitfield, people respected privacy. They judged you by your actions rather than your bloodline. "I am not certain I am prepared," Rebecca admitted quietly. Maggie set down the linens and crossed to where Rebecca stood. The midwife's hands were work-roughened, but gentle when she placed them on Rebecca's shoulders. For no mother is ever truly prepared, high-born or common. But you have strength in you. I have seen it these past months. Rebecca smiled weakly. Strength felt like the wrong word for what she possessed. Desperation seemed more accurate. She had survived these months through sheer determination to protect the children growing inside her. Every morning she woke in the small cottage instead of her luxurious chambers at Blackthorn Hall. She chose to keep moving forward. Not because she wanted to, but because two lives depended on her will to survive. The pain started near midnight. Rebecca woke to a sensation like iron bands tightening around her abdomen. She gasped, her hands clutching the simple quilt that covered her bed. For a moment, she thought perhaps she had eaten something that disagreed with her. Then the pain came again, stronger this time, and she understood. The children were coming. Maggie arrived within the hour, summoned by Rebecca's neighbor, who had heard movement in the cottage. The midwife took control of the situation with calm efficiency, barking orders at the two women she had brought as assistants. They prepared hot water and clean cloths. They helped Rebecca into a loose nightgown. They spoke in low, reassuring voices, while lightning illuminated the cottage windows. The labor was brutal. Hours blurred together in a haze of pain and exhaustion. Rebecca screamed when the contractions tore through her body with relentless force. She wept when Maggie told her to push and her strength failed. She begged for it to end when the pain became unbearable. "Almost there," Maggie said, her voice cutting through Rebecca's agony. "One more push, my lady. Don't give me one more." Rebecca gathered every remaining piece of strength and bore down. The first child entered the world with a sharp, angry cry that filled the cottage like a declaration of war. Maggie worked quickly, cutting the cord and wrapping the infant in clean linen before passing him to one of her assistants. "A boy," Maggie announced with satisfaction. "Strong lungs, good color." Rebecca barely had time to process the information before another contraction seized her body. The second child arrived 12 minutes later. Another boy, slightly smaller than his brother, but crying just as fiercely. Maggie moved with practiced efficiency, tending to both mother and infants, while her assistants cleaned and organized. Finally, when both babies were swaddled and the worst of the bleeding had been controlled, Maggie brought them to Rebecca. "Why, your sons, my lady." Rebecca's arms trembled as she accepted the weight of the two bundles. They were so small, so fragile. She pulled back the linen to see their faces properly, and her breath caught in her throat. They looked exactly like Ronald. Even hours old, barely cleaned and swaddled, the resemblance was undeniable. They had his dark hair, already thick despite their newborn state. His strong bone structure was visible even in their tiny faces. When one of them opened his eyes briefly, Rebecca saw Ronald's exact shade of deep brown staring back at her. Tears fell onto the linen wrapping as Rebecca held her sons against her chest. "What will you name them?" Maggie asked softly. Rebecca looked down at the twin boys who would never know their father. The firstborn, larger and more vocal, reminded her of Ronald's commanding presence. The second, quieter but watchful, possessed an intensity that suggested deep thinking. "Arthur," she whispered, touching the first child's cheek. "And Albert." Maggie nodded approvingly. "Good strong names, noble names." "Noble." Rebecca almost laughed at the irony. These boys were nobility by blood, the rightful heirs to one of England's most powerful duchies, but they would grow up in a coastal cottage, raised by a mother with no title and no husband. They would attend local schools instead of prestigious academies. They would play with fishermen's children instead of young lords. and perhaps that would save them from the cruelty and manipulation that poisoned aristocratic life. Rebecca held Arthur and Albert while dawn broke over Whitfield. Through the cottage window, she watched the sun rise over water that stretched endlessly toward a horizon she could not see. Somewhere beyond that horizon, Ronald was waking up in Blackthorn Hall. He was probably reviewing estate business or attending meetings with the family council. He had no idea his sons had just entered the world. "He does not deserve to know," Rebecca whispered to the sleeping infants. "He chose to believe I was worthless. He chose to trust lies over the woman he promised to love. He chose to send me away." But even as she spoke the words, a traitorous part of her heart still ached for the man Ronald had been before pressure and duty corrupted everything. The man who had courted her with poetry and flowers. The man who had danced with her until midnight and whispered promises against her skin. That man was gone, but perhaps he had never truly existed outside her imagination. The years in Whitfield passed with surprising speed. Rebecca established herself as a respectable widow, a fiction she allowed people to believe without ever explicitly confirming. She took work as a seamstress, using skills learned during her aristocratic education to create fine garments for wealthy merchant families. The income was modest, but sufficient. Arthur and Albert grew from helpless infants into strong, curious boys. By their third birthday, they were already displaying distinct personalities. Arthur was bold and confident, charging into situations with the kind of fearlessness that made Rebecca's heart stop daily. He climbed trees that were too tall and approached strange dogs with absolute certainty that the world existed to entertain him. That Albert was quieter but more observant. He studied everything with intense focus. The way birds built nests, the patterns of waves on the shore, the expressions on people's faces. He asked questions that suggested intelligence beyond his years and remembered every answer with perfect clarity. Both boys looked more like Ronald with each passing year. The resemblance became so pronounced that Rebecca sometimes had to leave the room when their expressions or gestures echoed their father too perfectly. The way Arthur stood with his hands clasped behind his back, exactly like Ronald addressing the family council. The way Albert tilted his head when considering a problem, mirroring Ronald's thoughtful concentration. They were growing into young versions of the man who had discarded them before they were born. On their seventh birthday, Rebecca took the boys to the beach for a picnic. They ran ahead of her, chasing seabirds and collecting shells with the boundless energy of childhood. Rebecca spread a blanket on the sand and watched them play, her heart simultaneously full and broken. Arthur ran back to her, his dark hair windswept and his face flushed with excitement. "Mother, Albert says the tide comes because the moon pulls the water. Is that true?" "It is," Rebecca confirmed, smiling at her thoughtful son who was now examining a tidal pool with scientific intensity. "How does the moon pull water?" Arthur demanded. "It is so far away." Rebecca began explaining gravity in terms a seven-year-old might understand, but Arthur's attention had already shifted. He was staring at something she held in her hand, a letter that had arrived that morning. "What is that?" Arthur asked. Rebecca looked down at the cream-colored envelope, embossed with an elaborate seal, an invitation to a grand charity exhibition in London, hosted by several prominent aristocratic families to benefit war orphans. The event would include art displays, musical performances, and a ballroom reception attended by the highest levels of English society. The signature at the bottom read, "Duke Ronald Wells." Rebecca had stared at that signature for an hour after the letter arrived. Her hands had trembled so badly she had to set it down. Seeing Ronald's name after 7 years felt like being struck by lightning. "It is just an invitation," Rebecca said carefully. To an event in London. London? Arthur's eyes went wide. Can we go? You said London has buildings taller than trees and carriages everywhere, and we will see, Rebecca interrupted gently. But she already knew the answer. For 7 years, she had avoided London completely. She had built a new life far from the aristocratic world that had destroyed her. She had protected Arthur and Albert from the cruelty and judgment that would inevitably follow if anyone discovered they were the Duke of Blackthorne's illegitimate sons. Returning to London was dangerous, foolish. But as she looked at her boys, growing so quickly, becoming young men who would soon ask questions she could not answer forever, Rebecca understood that she could not hide from the past indefinitely. They deserved to know their heritage. And perhaps in some twisted way, Ronald deserved to see what his weakness and doubt had cost him. But that night, after Arthur and Albert fell asleep, Rebecca pulled out a small wooden box she kept hidden beneath the floorboards of her bedroom. Inside was the pale blue ribbon from her wedding, a few letters Ronald had written during their courtship, and the signet ring she had slipped off his finger the night he proposed, insisting she keep it as proof of his devotion. She had meant to throw these items into the sea 100 times, but she never managed to do it. Rebecca held the ring up to the candlelight, watching shadows play across the engraved Wells family crest. Then she made a decision that would change everything. She would return to London. She would attend the charity exhibition, and she would bring Arthur and Albert. Not for revenge, not for reconciliation, but because hiding the truth had become more painful than revealing it. The London Rebecca returned to had changed remarkably little. The same grand buildings lined the same cobblestone streets, the same aristocratic families gathered in the same exclusive venues. Even the air smelled the same. Coal smoke and expensive perfume, and the peculiar scent of wealth concentrated in too small a space. But Rebecca had changed completely. The woman who stepped out of a hired carriage in front of the Kensington Exhibition Hall bore no resemblance to the broken Duchess who had fled Blackthorn Hall 7 years earlier. She wore a gown of deep crimson silk that had taken her 3 months to sew with painstaking perfection. Black lace gloves covered her hands. The diamond earrings, the only valuable jewelry she had kept from her former life, caught the late afternoon light. She looked regal, powerful, untouchable. Behind her, Arthur and Albert climbed out of the carriage with wide eyes. They wore matching dark suits that Rebecca had tailored specifically for this occasion. Their dark hair had been carefully brushed. Their faces had been scrubbed clean that morning, despite their protests. They looked like young lords preparing for their first formal event. "Stay close to me," Rebecca instructed quietly. "And remember what we discussed. Polite greetings. No running. And absolutely no climbing on anything." Arthur nodded seriously, though his eyes were already scanning the grand building with barely contained excitement. Albert simply took Rebecca's hand, his grip tight with nervousness, and they walked through the entrance together. The exhibition hall was magnificent. Soaring ceilings supported by marble columns created an impression of vast space. Crystal chandeliers hung like frozen waterfalls, each one containing hundreds of candles that filled the room with warm light. Artwork covered the walls, portraits and landscapes donated by aristocratic families for the charity auction. And everywhere, nobles in their finest attire circulated through the space like brilliantly colored birds. Rebecca paused just inside the entrance, letting her eyes adjust to the overwhelming sensory experience. She had forgotten how loud these events were. Conversation echoed off marble surfaces. Laughter rang out from clusters of men discussing politics and business. The rustle of silk and satin created a constant whisper beneath everything else. "Mother," Albert whispered, pressing closer to her side. There are so many people. There are, Rebecca agreed, squeezing his hand reassuringly. But we belong here just as much as anyone else. It was a lie, but a necessary one. They moved into the crowd slowly. Rebecca guided Arthur and Albert toward the art displays, hoping to remain relatively anonymous among the hundreds of attendees. But anonymity proved impossible. Heads turned as they passed. Rebecca felt the weight of stares following their progress through the room. She heard the whispers starting, spreading through the crowd like ripples across water. Is that? It cannot be. The former Duchess of Blackthorn. She disappeared years ago. Who are those boys? Dear God, look at their faces. The whispers grew louder, more insistent. Rebecca kept her expression carefully neutral, her training as a duchess serving her well even now. She did not acknowledge the stares, did not react to the murmured speculation. She simply walked through the exhibition hall with her sons, examining paintings and sculptures, as if oblivious to the growing storm of attention. But she was not oblivious. She felt every gaze like a physical touch, heard every whispered question like a shout, and she knew exactly what they were seeing. Two young boys who looked exactly like the Duke of Blackthorn. Rebecca was studying a landscape painting of the Scottish Highlands when she felt the atmosphere in the room shift. The whispers stopped abruptly. A strange tension filled the air, as if everyone had collectively held their breath. She turned slowly. Across the crowded exhibition hall, standing near the grand staircase that led to the upper gallery, was Ronald. 7 years had changed him. Silver threaded through his dark hair now, concentrated at his temples in a way that somehow made him look more distinguished. Lines had appeared around his eyes and mouth, marks of stress and sleepless nights. He looked older, harder, but still devastatingly handsome in the formal evening attire that aristocratic men wore like armor. And he was staring directly at her. For a moment that stretched into eternity, Rebecca and Ronald simply looked at each other across the crowded room. 7 years of separation collapsed into nothing. 7 years of anger and heartbreak and desperate survival evaporated like morning mist. Rebecca's heart betrayed her by racing, or then Ronald's gaze shifted downward, landing on Arthur and Albert standing on either side of their mother. The color drained from his face. Rebecca watched understanding dawn across Ronald's features, like sunrise breaking over a devastated landscape. She saw shock first, his eyes widening, his mouth opening slightly, then confusion as his mind scrambled to process what he was seeing, then something that looked like hope, followed immediately by dread. Because the resemblance was impossible to miss. Arthur had Ronald's exact bone structure, his commanding presence, his way of standing with unconscious authority. Albert possessed Ronald's intense gaze, his thoughtful expression, his habit of tilting his head when observing something interesting. Every noble in the exhibition hall could see it. The resemblance was so obvious, so undeniable, that denial became impossible. Mother, Arthur said, tugging on Rebecca's sleeve, why is that gentleman staring at us? The question cut through the silence like a knife through silk. Rebecca looked down at her son, her beautiful, innocent son, who had no idea he was looking at his own father. Arthur's dark eyes held only curiosity. No understanding, no recognition of the devastating reunion playing out in front of hundreds of witnesses. I do not know, Rebecca lied gently. Perhaps he simply finds the painting behind us interesting. But Ronald had started walking toward them. The crowd parted automatically, nobles stepping aside to create a path for the Duke of Blackthorn. Whispers erupted again, louder this time, no longer bothering with discretion. This was the scandal of the season unfolding in real time. and no one wanted to miss a single moment. Rebecca stood perfectly still, her hands resting on her son's shoulders. She would not run, would not hide. She had spent 7 years preparing for this moment, even if she had never consciously admitted it to herself. Ronald stopped 3 feet away from them. Up close, the changes in him were more apparent. He looked exhausted beneath the distinguished exterior, haunted, like a man who had stopped sleeping well years ago and never recovered. "Rebecca," he said, his voice rough with emotion. "Just her name. Nothing else." But the way he said it contained entire volumes of unspoken words. "Your Grace," Rebecca replied with cool politeness. The formal address created distance that her racing heart threatened to destroy. Ronald's gaze dropped to Arthur and Albert again. He studied them with an intensity that made Rebecca's protective instincts flare. She wanted to pull her sons close, shield them from the man who had discarded them before they existed. But she forced herself to remain still. "Who?" Ronald's voice failed him. He cleared his throat and tried again. "Who are these young men?" Silence spread through the exhibition hall like frost. Every conversation had stopped. Every eye was fixed on the small group near the Scottish Highland painting. Rebecca met Ronald's gaze directly. 7 years ago, she had fled from this man in tears and heartbreak. 7 years ago, she had been a broken duchess with no power and no options. But that woman was dead. "These are my sons," Rebecca said clearly, her voice carrying through the silent room. "Arthur and Albert Foster." Foster. Her maiden name, not Wells. The implication struck Ronald like a physical blow. His face went pale, then flushed, then pale again. His hands clenched at his sides. "Your sons," he repeated slowly. "Yes." "Their father." "Is no concern of yours, Your Grace." The formal distance in Rebecca's tone could have frozen water. She saw the words hit Ronald, saw him absorb the carefully constructed lie she was building. Because officially, legally, these boys were not his sons. They bore her maiden name. They had been raised far from London. As far as society was concerned, Rebecca had moved on after their separation and built a new life with someone else. But biology didn't lie. Every person in that exhibition hall could see the truth written across Arthur and Albert's faces. These boys were the Duke of Blackthorn's sons, regardless of what name they carried or what story Rebecca told. "How old are they?" Ronald asked, his voice barely above a whisper. Rebecca considered lying, considered adding years to their age to make the timeline impossible. But something in Ronald's expression, desperation mixed with dawning horror, made her choose truth. 7 years old," she said quietly. "They turned 7 last month. Mathematics were simple and brutal. 7 years old meant they had been conceived during Rebecca's marriage to Ronald. 7 years ago, Rebecca had disappeared from Blackthorn Hall after he ordered her sent away. The timeline aligned perfectly with betrayal and exile, and children carried in secret." Ronald swayed slightly, as if the weight of realization had knocked him off balance. "Rebecca," he said again, and this time her name sounded like a prayer, or perhaps a confession. "Mother," Albert spoke up, his voice small in the vast space, "I am hungry. May we visit the refreshment table?" The innocent request shattered the moment. Rebecca tore her gaze away from Ronald and looked down at her sons. They both looked uncomfortable with the attention focused on them. Arthur shifted his weight from foot to foot with barely contained energy. Albert pressed closer to Rebecca's side, seeking protection from the roomful of staring strangers. "Of course," Rebecca said warmly. She turned back to Ronald with cool politeness. "If you will excuse us, Your Grace. My sons require attending." She started to walk away. Wait. Ronald's hand shot out, stopping just short of grabbing her arm. Please, Aunt, I must speak with you. Rebecca looked at his outstretched hand, then back to his face. We have nothing to discuss. We have everything to discuss. Ronald's voice cracked. Rebecca, those boys, they are mine, Rebecca interrupted firmly. They are mine, and you gave up any claim to anything of mine 7 years ago. She took Arthur and Albert's hands and walked away from the Duke of Blackthorn, leaving him standing alone in the center of the exhibition hall, while hundreds of nobles watched and whispered. But Rebecca could feel Ronald's gaze following them across the room, and despite 7 years of building walls around her heart, she could feel those walls beginning to crack. Ronald did not sleep that night. He sat in his study at the London townhouse, staring at nothing while dawn crept across the city. His mind replayed the exhibition hall encounter on an endless loop. Rebecca's face, the boys' faces, the undeniable resemblance that had made his chest constrict with something between joy and devastating grief. Those were his sons, 7 years old, conceived before Rebecca disappeared, hidden from him for their entire lives, and he had no one to blame but himself. The memory of that night, 7 years ago, had haunted him constantly. Lady Edith and Cecilia pressing him to send Rebecca away, his own weakness and exhaustion making him agree to something monstrous, the empty bed when he finally returned to his chambers near dawn, the cold letter Rebecca had left behind. He had searched for her initially, sent investigators to track her movements, but Rebecca had vanished completely, as if she had never existed. Eventually, the family council had pressured him to move forward, to put aside his failed marriage and focus on producing heirs. But Ronald had never remarried. He told himself it was because aristocratic law made divorce complicated, because the scandal would damage the Wells family reputation, because he was too busy managing the duchy to concern himself with courtship. All lies. The truth was simpler and more pathetic. He had never stopped loving Rebecca. Now she had returned with two sons who looked exactly like him, and Ronald understood the full magnitude of what his weakness had destroyed. A knock on the study door interrupted his thoughts. Come, Ronald called, his voice rough from hours of silence. His secretary, Francis Bowman, entered carrying the morning correspondence and newspapers. The young man's face was carefully neutral, but Ronald could see questions burning behind his professional composure. The scandal had already begun. The morning papers, Your Grace, Francis said, setting the stack on the desk. I thought you might wish to see them. Ronald picked up the top newspaper and immediately regretted it. The headline screamed across the front page, Mysterious Reunion. Former Duchess returns with suspicious heirs. Below the headline was a detailed account of yesterday's exhibition, complete with breathless speculation about the identity of Rebecca's sons and their remarkable resemblance to the Duke of Blackthorn. Ronald set down the paper before he could read further. Arrange a meeting, he said quietly. With whom, Your Grace? With Rebecca Foster. Send a message to wherever she is staying in London. I'd tell her I request the honor of calling on her at her convenience. Francis hesitated. Your Grace, perhaps it would be wise to consult with Lady Edith before... My mother has no say in this matter, Ronald interrupted sharply. Send the message, Francis. The secretary bowed and retreated. Ronald returned to staring at nothing, his mind already planning what he would say when he saw Rebecca again. How he would apologize. How he would beg for the opportunity to know his sons. How he would try to repair damage that might be beyond fixing. Rebecca received Ronald's message at the modest hotel where she and the boys were staying. She read the carefully worded request 3 times, her hands remarkably steady, despite the chaos of emotions raging inside her. He wanted to see her, to speak privately, to beg, probably. Or Rebecca looked across the hotel room, where Arthur and Albert were playing a complicated game involving toy soldiers and elaborate battle strategies. They had adapted remarkably well to London after their quiet life in Whitfield. Arthur loved the noise and activity. Albert enjoyed observing the different types of people crowding the city streets. Neither boy understood the magnitude of what had happened at the exhibition yesterday. "Mother?" Arthur called without looking up from his game. "Albert keeps changing the rules. Tell him he cannot do that." "The rules were poorly designed," Albert countered calmly. "I simply corrected the logical inconsistencies." "That is called cheating. That is called strategy." Rebecca smiled despite herself. Their constant bickering reminded her of brothers she had read about in novels, or competitive but fundamentally devoted to each other. They fought viciously over toys and games, but heaven help anyone else who threatened either of them. Ronald deserved to know them. Whatever else had happened between husband and wife, these boys deserved the opportunity to know their father. "Boys," Rebecca said, interrupting their argument, "we will have a visitor this afternoon." Arthur looked up with interest. "Who?" "The Duke of Blackthorn." Both boys stared at her. Albert's expression turned calculating, his sharp mind clearly working through implications. Arthur simply looked confused. "The man from yesterday?" Arthur asked. "The one who stared at us?" "Yes." "Why is he visiting us?" Rebecca knelt down so she was eye level with her sons. This conversation had been inevitable from the moment she decided to return to London. She had known questions would come. Truths would need to be revealed. She had simply hoped for more time to prepare. "Arthur, Albert, I need to tell you something important about your father." Both boys went very still. Rebecca had told them almost nothing about their father over the years, only that he was a good man who could not be part of their lives for complicated reasons they would understand when they were older. The boys had accepted this vague explanation with remarkable patience, though Rebecca knew curiosity gnawed at them constantly. "The Duke of Blackthorn is your father," Rebecca said quietly. Silence filled the hotel room. Arthur spoke first. "The man from yesterday is our father?" "Yes." "But you said our father could not be part of our lives," Albert added, his tone more confused than accusatory. "That was true when you were babies," Rebecca explained carefully. "Your father believed I could never give him children. Other people lied to him and made him think something that was not true. So when I discovered I was carrying you both, I chose to leave rather than force him to accept children he thought were impossible." It was a carefully edited version of the truth. The boys did not need to know about exile and heartbreak and manipulation. Not yet. Perhaps not ever. "He did not know we existed?" Arthur's eyes had gone very wide. "No. He learned about you yesterday, at the exhibition." Albert processed this information with his characteristic intensity. That is why he stared at us. He was experiencing shock and recognition. "Yes." "Is that why we look like him?" Arthur asked. "Because he is our father?" "Yes." "Do we have to talk to him?" Albert's voice had gone small, uncertain. Rebecca pulled both boys close, wrapping her arms around them. "You do not have to do anything you do not wish to do. But I think perhaps you might want to meet your father properly, to ask him questions, to let him know who you have become." "What if he does not like us?" Arthur whispered. The question shattered Rebecca's heart into pieces. "He will love you," she said fiercely. "You are brilliant and brave and wonderful. Any father would be honored to call you his sons." But even as she spoke the words, doubt crept through her mind. Ronald had discarded her easily enough when he believed her barren. What if he found the reality of fatherhood less appealing than the abstract concept of heirs? What if Arthur and Albert disappointed him somehow? What if Rebecca's decision to let Ronald into their lives ended up hurting the boys she had worked so hard to protect? Ronald arrived at precisely 3 o'clock, as the message had specified. He stood outside the hotel room door for a full minute, gathering courage he had not needed since his first battle during the war. Then he knocked. Rebecca opened the door immediately. She wore a simple day dress of pale blue that made her eyes look luminous. Her hair was arranged in a loose style that suggested she had been too distracted to fuss with elaborate pinning. She looked beautiful and terrifying in equal measure. "Your Grace," she said formally. "Please come in." Ronald stepped into the modest hotel room and immediately saw the boys. De Arthur and Albert sat side by side on a small sofa near the window. They had clearly been instructed to behave formally. Their postures were rigid, their hands folded in their laps, their expressions carefully neutral. But their eyes betrayed them, wide and curious and uncertain. Ronald's throat closed. These were his sons, his blood, the heirs he had believed impossible. They sat 3 feet away from him, close enough to touch, and Ronald had no idea how to bridge the vast distance that 7 years of separation had created. "Arthur, Albert," Rebecca's voice cut through Ronald's paralysis. "This is the Duke of Blackthorn, your father." The boys stood in unison, their training evident, despite their unconventional upbringing. They bowed slightly, not the deep, formal bow that aristocratic sons would perform, but a respectful acknowledgement that showed Rebecca had taught them manners. "Sir," they said together. Ronald's vision blurred. He had imagined this moment 1,000 times since seeing them yesterday, had planned eloquent speeches and careful explanations. But now, faced with the reality of his sons, all words failed him. "Hello," he managed finally. His voice sounded broken even to his own ears. Awkward silence stretched between them. Rebecca moved to stand behind the boys, her hands resting protectively on their shoulders. The message was clear. They were hers. She had raised them. She would continue protecting them from anything that might cause harm. Even their own father. "Perhaps you should sit," Rebecca suggested. "This may take some time." Ronald sat in the chair opposite the sofa. The boys settled back down. They pressed close together in that way siblings do when facing something uncertain. They watched Ronald with identical expressions of guarded curiosity. He had no idea where to begin. "You are 7 years old," Ronald said finally. A statement, not a question, but Arthur nodded anyway. "Yes, sir. We had a birthday last month." "What did you do to celebrate?" "Mother took us to the beach," Albert offered quietly. "We had a picnic and collected shells." "Do you like the beach?"
"Very much. We live near the ocean in Whitfield."
Whitfield. Ronald had never even heard of the place. While he had been managing Blackthorn Hall and attending Parliament sessions and fulfilling ducal duties, his sons had been growing up in some unknown coastal town, collecting shells and having picnics. He had missed everything. "What else do you enjoy?" Ronald asked, too desperate to know something, anything, about these boys. Arthur launched into an enthusiastic description of climbing trees and exploring tide pools and building elaborate forts out of driftwood. His energy filled the small room, making it feel less oppressive. He spoke with his hands, gesturing wildly to emphasize exciting moments in various adventures. Albert added quieter observations about the birds they watched, and the books they read, and the way the stars looked different depending on the season. Ronald listened to his sons describe lives he had never been part of, and grief threatened to overwhelm him completely. But beneath the grief, something else was growing. Pride. These boys were remarkable. Arthur possessed the kind of fearless confidence that suggested natural leadership, as Albert demonstrated the careful observation and analytical thinking that would serve him well in whatever path he chose. They were smart and curious and surprisingly well adjusted, considering the circumstances of their birth. Rebecca had done this. She had raised these extraordinary children entirely alone, while Ronald had been wallowing in self-pity at Blackthorn Hall. After an hour of stilted conversation, Rebecca suggested the boys might enjoy exploring the hotel gardens, while she and Ronald spoke privately. Arthur and Albert left eagerly, their formal restraint evaporating the moment they escaped the emotionally charged room. Silence returned, heavier now that the boys' voices no longer filled it. "They are wonderful," Ronald said quietly. "They are," Rebecca agreed. There was no warmth in her voice, just statement of fact. "Rebecca," Ronald's carefully prepared speeches evaporated. "I have no words for what I did to you, to them, to all of us." "Then perhaps you should not try to find words." The cold response struck like a slap. Ronald had expected anger, had prepared for rage and accusations, but Rebecca's icy indifference was somehow worse. "I thought you could not have children," Ronald continued, needing to explain, even though explanations changed nothing. "The medical report said..." "The medical reports were forged," Rebecca interrupted. "Dr. Shepherd confirmed my pregnancy the very night you ordered me sent away. I was carrying Arthur and Albert when I left Blackthorn Hall." The revelation hit Ronald like cannon fire. "You were pregnant that night?"
"Yes."
"You knew?" "I had just learned what I was coming to tell you when I overheard you with your mother and Cecilia, when I heard you call me Baron, when I heard you order my exile." Ronald's hands began to shake. "I did not know. Rebecca, I swear I did not know you were..." "You did not trust me enough to verify those reports," Rebecca said, her voice still controlled, but carrying an undercurrent of pain that 7 years had not erased. "You did not fight for our marriage. You did not question why I had suddenly become inconvenient. You simply agreed to discard me like broken furniture." Each word was accurate and devastating. "I was weak," Ronald admitted. "The pressure from the family council, from my mother, from everyone demanding heirs. I let it poison me. I let it destroy the best thing in my life." "You destroyed your family," Rebecca corrected. "You threw away your wife and the children you claimed to desperately want, and you did it because you were too tired to fight for us." "I know. Knowing changes nothing." "I understand that," Ronald said quietly, "but I am begging you anyway. Let me know them. Let me be part of their lives. I cannot undo the past 7 years, but perhaps I can be present for the next 70. Rebecca stood and walked to the window overlooking the gardens. Ronald could see Arthur and Albert below, racing each other along a path between rose bushes. Their laughter drifted up faintly. "They deserve to know their father," Rebecca said finally. "I will not keep you from them out of spite." Hope flared in Ronald's chest. "But," Rebecca continued, turning to face him with eyes that held no forgiveness, "you will earn their love, and I will not command them to care for you. I will not tell them they must respect you simply because of blood. You will build a relationship with Arthur and Albert on your own merit." "I accept those terms." "And Ronald," Rebecca's voice dropped to something that carried warning, "if you hurt them, if you disappoint them, if you fail them the way you failed me, I will take them back to Whitfield, and you will never see them again." The threat was clear and absolute. Ronald nodded. "I understand." He would do better. He had to do better. Because the alternative, losing his sons again after just finding them, was unthinkable. The relationship between Ronald and his sons developed slowly over the following weeks. Rebecca had agreed to extend their stay in London, and partly because the boys were enjoying the city, and partly because watching Ronald awkwardly navigate fatherhood provided a strange satisfaction she would not examine too closely. Ronald visited every afternoon. He took Arthur and Albert to Hyde Park, where they fed ducks and sailed toy boats in the Serpentine. He brought books he thought they might enjoy, adventure stories and scientific texts that Albert devoured hungrily. He arranged a fencing lesson, watching with barely concealed pride as Arthur picked up the basics with natural athleticism. The boys warmed to him gradually. Arthur especially seemed drawn to Ronald's stories about managing Blackthorn Hall and navigating political complexities. He asked endless questions about duty and responsibility and what it meant to be a duke. Ronald answered with patience that surprised Rebecca, and given how exhausted those same questions had once made him when directed at his own failures. Albert remained more reserved, but Rebecca caught him studying Ronald with the same intense observation he applied to everything interesting. He asked different questions about Ronald's childhood, about what he read, about how he made decisions when facts pointed in conflicting directions. Rebecca watched these interactions from a careful distance. She chaperoned every visit, but did not participate actively. This was Ronald's relationship to build or destroy on his own merit. But late at night, when Arthur and Albert were asleep and Rebecca sat alone in the hotel room, she felt the old wounds reopening, because seeing Ronald with their sons reminded her painfully of what they could have been. What they should have been: a family, united, happy. But instead they were fragments trying to reform into something that could never match the original shape. One afternoon, while the boys were occupied with a complicated chess game Ronald was teaching them, Rebecca stepped onto the hotel balcony for air. The London streets below bustled with activity, carriages and pedestrians and street vendors calling their wares. She did not hear Ronald follow her until he spoke. "They are happy here," he said quietly. Rebecca did not turn around. "They are adaptable. Children often are. You raised them well, better than I likely would have." That admission should have brought satisfaction. Instead, it just made Rebecca tired. "I had no choice but to do well," she said. "They depended entirely on me." Silence stretched between them, filled with 7 years of unspoken accusations. "I searched for you," Ronald said finally, "after you left. I sent investigators to every corner of England." "You did not search hard enough." "Perhaps not. Or perhaps you simply did not wish to be found." That was accurate. Rebecca had been very careful to erase her trail when fleeing London. She had used her mother's maiden name in Whitfield, had paid in cash when possible to avoid paper records, had kept herself deliberately invisible to anyone who might report back to aristocratic circles. "What would you have done if you had found me?" Rebecca asked. "Dragged me back to Blackthorn Hall? Forced me to endure more humiliation?" "I would have begged you to come home. I was not your wife anymore. You made that clear when you ordered me exiled." "I never divorced you," Ronald countered. "Legally, or you are still the Duchess of Blackthorn." Rebecca laughed, but the sound held no humor. "A duchess with no home, no title, and no husband. How generous of you to leave me the legal fiction of marriage while stripping away everything that gave it meaning. I was a fool." "Yes, you were." Ronald moved closer, though he did not touch her. Rebecca could feel his presence anyway, a warmth at her back that her traitorous body still responded to, even after everything. "Rebecca, I need to tell you something about that night. I already know everything I need to know about that night." "No," Ronald said firmly. "You do not." Something in his tone made Rebecca finally turn to face him. Ronald's expression had shifted from regret to something that looked like anger. Not at her, at something else. "The medical reports that claimed you were barren," Ronald continued. They were not just wrong. They were deliberately falsified. Rebecca had suspected as much, but hearing it confirmed still sent ice through her veins. How do you know? Because I finally investigated properly. I should have done it 7 years ago, but I was too broken and too convinced you had simply left because you could not bear the pressure any more. Last week, I tracked down Dr. Harrington, the physician whose signature appeared on those reports. And? He never examined you. Never even met you. Someone paid him to sign blank medical documents that Cecilia and my mother filled in with whatever lies served their purposes. The balcony tilted. Rebecca gripped the railing to steady herself. She had known Cecilia manipulated Ronald, had suspected Lady Edith orchestrated her removal. But having confirmation that they had committed fraud, had falsified medical documents, had destroyed her marriage with deliberate criminal acts. Your mother and Cecilia did this. Rebecca's voice came out strangled. Yes. I confronted them both 3 days ago. What did they say? Ronald's expression hardened into something Rebecca had rarely seen on his face. Pure rage. My mother claimed she was protecting the Wells bloodline from a duchess who was clearly inadequate. Cecilia claimed she was saving me from a loveless marriage. Both of them insisted they acted out of concern for my well-being and the duchy's future. They destroyed our family. I know. They stole 7 years from you and your sons. I know. And what have you done about it? Rebecca demanded, that the ice in her voice had melted into fire. What consequences have they faced for their crimes? Ronald met her gaze steadily. My mother has been removed from Blackthorn Hall. She now resides in the Dower House, with minimal staff and no authority over estate matters. I have severed all financial support beyond what is legally required. And Cecilia? I have initiated legal proceedings against her for fraud and conspiracy. The scandal will ruin her socially, and the courts will likely impose financial penalties that will bankrupt her family. It was more than Rebecca had expected, but somehow less than she wanted. Exile and bankruptcy seemed insufficient punishment for stealing years of a mother's life with her children's father. They should hang, Rebecca said flatly. Perhaps. But English law does not execute aristocrats for destroying marriages, no matter how calculated the destruction. Rebecca turned back to the street below. Her hands gripped the balcony railing so tightly her knuckles went white. I was pregnant, she whispered. I was carrying your sons. I was coming to tell you the news that would have saved everything, and instead I overheard you agreeing to throw me away. I know. You broke me, Ronald. Not Cecilia, not your mother, you. The man I loved more than my own life broke me into pieces. I know. Stop saying you know, Rebecca whirled on him, and finally the careful control she had maintained for weeks shattered completely. You do not know, or you cannot possibly know what it felt like to stand in that corridor carrying children you had prayed for while listening to your husband call you worthless. You cannot know what it felt like to give birth alone in a cottage while you were here in London, probably having dinner parties. You cannot know what it felt like to see your sons' faces and recognize their father in every feature while knowing he had discarded them before they even existed. Tears streamed down Rebecca's face. She did not bother wiping them away. Ronald looked stricken. You are right. I cannot know. But Rebecca, I need you to understand something. What could you possibly say that would matter now? I never stopped loving you. The words hit like a physical blow. Rebecca stared at Ronald, searching his face for lies, for manipulation, and for anything that would let her dismiss this confession as another aristocratic game. but his expression showed only raw honesty, pain that matched her own. "I never remarried," Ronald continued quietly. "I never courted anyone else. I never even considered it. People thought I was waiting for an appropriate amount of time after our separation. But the truth is simpler. I could not imagine replacing you." "You threw me away," Rebecca said, her voice breaking. "I failed you in the worst possible way. But I never stopped loving you. Every day for 7 years, I have regretted my weakness. Every night, I wished I could undo what I allowed to happen. Wishing changes nothing. I know that too. But I need you to understand that losing you destroyed me just as thoroughly as my betrayal destroyed you. The difference is that you survived and built a new life. I simply existed in the ruins of what I had destroyed." Rebecca wanted to rage at him, to scream that his suffering meant nothing compared to what she had endured. But looking at Ronald now, really looking at him, she saw the truth in his words. He looked haunted, worn down. Like a man who had been bleeding slowly for 7 years and only now realized the wound might be fatal. "I do not forgive you," Rebecca said quietly. "I would not expect you to. And I cannot give you what you want. I want only to know my sons. You want more than that." Rebecca met his gaze directly. "You want your family back. You want to undo the past. You want me to forget everything and return to Blackthorn Hall and pretend the last 7 years never happened." Ronald did not deny it. "I cannot do that," Rebecca said. "That version of me died the night you sent me away. The woman I am now would never trust you with her heart again." "Then let me earn your trust." "No." The refusal was final. Absolute. Ronald absorbed it like a man accepting a death sentence. He nodded slowly, his shoulders sagging with defeat. "May I still see Arthur and Albert?" he asked. "Yes. They deserve to know their father." "Thank you." "Do not thank me. I am not doing this for you. I am doing it for them." Rebecca walked back into the hotel room, leaving Ronald alone on the balcony. Behind her, she heard him make a sound that might have been a sob. But she did not turn back. 3 months passed in a strange new routine. Rebecca and the boys remained in London, in a more comfortable townhouse that Ronald insisted on providing. Rebecca had initially refused, but Arthur and Albert loved the city and begged to stay longer. She could not deny them the opportunity to know their father, even if her own heart twisted painfully every time she watched them together. Ronald visited every day now. He taught Arthur to ride properly, sitting atop a magnificent bay, gelding in Hyde Park, while Rebecca watched from a bench. He brought Albert to scientific lectures at the Royal Society, sitting in the public gallery, while scholars discussed astronomy and natural philosophy. He took both boys to the theatre, to museums, to the Tower of London, to see the crown jewels. He was, Rebecca had to admit, becoming a good father. But something had shifted between Ronald and Rebecca herself. The careful distance she had maintained began eroding despite her best efforts. Ronald's persistence wore down her defences like water smoothing stone. Not through grand gestures or dramatic declarations, but through small moments of consideration. He brought her favourite tea without being asked. He remembered she preferred roses over other flowers and began leaving small bouquets at the townhouse. He asked her opinion on decisions regarding Arthur and Albert's education, truly listening to her answers instead of simply waiting for his turn to speak. And worst of all, he looked at her the way he used to look at her during their courtship, like she was the most important person in any room. Rebecca tried to resist the pull, reminded herself daily of the betrayal, of the 7 years spent alone, of the pain that still lived inside her chest like broken glass. But resistance became harder when Ronald knelt before Arthur one afternoon and apologized. They were in the townhouse drawing room. Rebecca was ostensibly reading while the boys played chess with their father. Albert had just made a particularly clever move that sacrificed his queen to create an unavoidable checkmate 3 moves later. Ronald studied the board with genuine admiration. Brilliant. Truly brilliant. Albert glowed with pride. Then Arthur asked the question that changed everything. Father, did you really not know Mother was carrying us when she left? The drawing room went silent. Ronald's hands stilled on the chess pieces. His expression shifted through several emotions before settling on something that looked like grief. No, he said quietly. I did not know. Oh, and that is my deepest shame. Why did Mother leave? Arthur pressed. At 7 years old, he was old enough to understand that something significant had broken their family apart, even if he did not understand the details. Ronald looked at Rebecca. She gave him a slight nod. The boys deserved truth, at least in a form they could understand. I made a terrible mistake, Ronald said, turning back to his sons. People I should not have trusted told me lies about your mother. They said she could never have children. I believed those lies instead of trusting the woman I loved. And because of my weakness, I agreed to send her away. That was wrong, Albert said with his characteristic bluntness. Yes, it was very wrong. Did you apologize? Arthur asked. I have tried, but some mistakes are too large for simple apologies to fix. Arthur frowned, processing this adult complexity. Mother says you should always apologize when you hurt someone. Your mother is right about most things. Then apologize properly, Arthur insisted, with the absolute certainty of childhood. Kneel down like knights do when they pledge loyalty. Ronald's eyes widened. Arthur, I do not think... Do it, Albert added, his quiet voice carrying unexpected authority. You hurt, Mother. You should apologize the way people apologize for really bad things. Rebecca started to intervene, to tell the boys that this was unnecessary, but Ronald was already moving. He lowered himself to his knees in the center of the drawing room, his expensive trousers pressing against the carpet. Then he looked up at Rebecca with an expression that shattered what remained of her carefully constructed defenses. Rebecca Foster, Ronald said, his voice steady despite the emotion clearly visible in his eyes. I failed you in every possible way. I did not trust you. I did not fight for you. I did not protect you from people who wished you harm. I threw away the best thing in my life because I was too weak and too foolish to recognize its value. Rebecca's book slipped from her hands. I robbed you of 7 years you should have spent in comfort and security, Ronald continued. I robbed our sons of a father who should have been there from the moment they entered this world. I caused you pain that no amount of time will fully heal, and I am sorry. I am more sorry than any words can possibly express. Tears blurred Rebecca's vision. I do not expect forgiveness, Ronald said quietly. I do not deserve it, but I am begging you anyway. Not for my sake, for theirs. He gestured to Arthur and Albert, who watched with wide eyes. Come home. Let me spend the rest of my life trying to make amends. Let me give you and our sons everything I should have given you from the beginning. The drawing room held its breath. Rebecca looked at Ronald kneeling before her. Then at Arthur and Albert, their young faces hopeful and confused and desperately wanting their family to be whole. She wanted to say yes. Every broken piece of her heart wanted to forgive and forget and return to Blackthorn Hall and pretend they could rebuild what had been destroyed. But deep inside her chest, beneath the love and the longing and the desperate hope, that was the memory of standing in that corridor 7 years ago, pregnant with twins, hearing her husband agree to her exile. That memory was a wound that had never fully healed, would never fully heal. "Stand up," Rebecca said softly. Ronald rose slowly, uncertainty flickering across his face. Rebecca walked to where he stood. She reached up and touched his cheek gently, the first time she had initiated physical contact with him since returning to London. "You taught me something terrible, Ronald," she said, her voice breaking. "You taught me that love without trust becomes grief." Ronald's expression crumbled. "I still love you," Rebecca continued, and the admission felt like tearing out her own heart. "I never stopped loving you. But love is not enough. It was not enough 7 years ago, when pressure and doubt poisoned it. It is not enough now when I cannot forget what you destroyed." "Rebecca!" "I forgive you," she interrupted. "Truly. I understand that Cecilia and your mother manipulated you. I understand that you were under tremendous pressure. I even understand that you loved me all along." Hope flickered in Ronald's eyes. "But I cannot come home with you," Rebecca finished, "because every time I look at you, I remember that night. I remember how easily you believed I was worthless, how quickly you agreed to discard me, and I cannot build a life on that foundation." The hope died. "Arthur and Albert deserve to know their father," Rebecca said. "I will not keep them from you. But I cannot be your wife again. That part of me died when you sent me away." Ronald stood absolutely still. Then, slowly, he nodded. "I understand," he said, his voice rough with suppressed emotion. "Do you?" "No, but I accept it." Rebecca lowered her hand from his cheek. "I think it would be best if we returned to Whitfield soon. The boys have had enough of London. They miss the sea."
"When?"
"End of the week." 3 days. Ronald would have 3 more days with his sons before they disappeared into their other life again. "May I visit them in Whitfield?" Ronald asked.
"Regularly?"
"Yes. They should not lose their father again."
"And you?"
"I will be civil when you visit. I will not prevent you from building relationships with Arthur and Albert."
"But you and I,"
Rebecca's voice failed her. "We are finished." Ronald absorbed this final rejection like a man taking a mortal wound. His face went pale, then carefully blank.
"I understand," he said again. Arthur and Albert had been watching this exchange with confusion, clearly visible on their young faces. They did not fully understand the adult complexities playing out before them, but they recognized finality when they heard it.
"Mother?" Arthur said uncertainly. "Are you crying?" Rebecca had not realized tears were streaming down her face.
"Yes," she admitted.
"Why?"
"Because sometimes loving someone and leaving them happen at the same time."
Arthur frowned, not understanding.
Albert simply watched his mother with those intense eyes that saw too much. Ronald quietly excused himself, claiming important business required his attention. He kissed both boys on the forehead before leaving, and Rebecca saw his hands trembling when he touched them. After the door closed behind him, Rebecca sank onto the sofa and pulled her sons close. They wrapped their small arms around her, offering comfort they were too young to fully understand. Outside, rain began to fall on London. And somewhere in the city, the Duke of Blackthorn returned to an empty townhouse and finally allowed himself to break. The morning Rebecca and the boys left London dawned grey and cold. Ronald arrived at the townhouse before sunrise, unable to stay away, even though he knew watching them leave would destroy him. A hired carriage waited in the street, the driver already loading luggage, while Arthur and Albert darted around excitedly, thrilled to be returning to Whitfield and the sea. Rebecca emerged from the townhouse in a simple travelling dress, her expression composed, but her eyes red from crying.
She had been crying a lot in the 3 days since she told Ronald their marriage was truly over. "You came," she said quietly. "I could not let you leave without saying goodbye. We are not disappearing forever. You know where we will be." "I know. But this feels like goodbye anyway." Because it was. Rebecca was taking their sons and returning to her other life, the life she had built without Ronald. He would visit, yes. He would maintain relationships with Arthur and Albert. But the family he had dreamed of rebuilding was leaving, and Ronald understood with painful clarity that they would never return. Arthur ran up to Ronald and threw his arms around his father's waist. "Will you visit soon?" "Very soon," Ronald promised, kneeling to be eye level with his son. "And you must write to me about everything happening in Whitfield, all your adventures, everything you learn." "I will write every week," Arthur declared with the absolute commitment of childhood. Albert approached more cautiously. He studied Ronald's face with that unsettling intensity, as if memorizing features he would need to recall later. "Father," Albert said carefully, "are you and Mother ever going to be married again?" The question struck like a knife. Ronald glanced at Rebecca. She looked away, focusing on the carriage and luggage and anything except the conversation happening between father and son. "No," Ronald answered honestly. "Your mother and I will not be married again."
"Why not?"
"Because I hurt her very badly once. And some hurts cannot be fixed, no matter how much we wish they could be." Albert processed this information with visible concentration. "That makes Mother sad. It makes me sad, too."
"Then why?"
"Albert," Rebecca interrupted gently, "we need to leave soon if we want to reach the first coaching inn before dark." Albert nodded reluctantly and climbed into the carriage after his brother. Both boys pressed their faces against the window, waving enthusiastically. Rebecca turned to Ronald one final time. "Thank you," she said quietly, "for these last months, for getting to know them, for trying. I wish I had tried 7 years ago. So do I." They stood in silence for a long moment. 7 years of pain and love and loss hung between them like fog. "Rebecca," Ronald said finally, "if I had fought for you that night, if I had trusted you over their lies, if I had been stronger—"
"Do not,"
Rebecca interrupted. "Do not torture yourself with what might have been. I cannot help it. Every night I lie awake, thinking about all the moments I could have chosen differently. Those moments are gone. We cannot reclaim them." "I know. But I need you to know something before you leave." Rebecca waited. "I will love you until the day I die," Ronald said, his voice cracking. "I will love you through every visit to Whitfield. I will love you while watching our sons grow into men. I will love you across whatever distance you put between us. And I will regret every day what my weakness destroyed." Rebecca's composure finally shattered. Tears streamed down her face, and for a moment she looked like the broken duchess who had fled Blackthorn Hall 7 years ago. "I will love you too," she whispered. "I will love you and hate you and grieve for what we could have been, but I cannot be with you, Ronald. I simply cannot." "I know. Do you? Do you truly understand that this is goodbye?" "Yes." Rebecca reached up and touched his face one last time. Her fingers traced the line of his jaw, the curve of his cheek, as if memorizing the shape of him. Then she pulled away and climbed into the carriage. The driver snapped the reins. The horses moved forward. Arthur and Albert waved frantically from the window while the carriage rolled down the street. Ronald stood motionless, watching until they disappeared around the corner. Then he was alone. 5 years passed. Ronald visited Whitfield regularly, making the journey every 6 weeks without fail.
He watched Arthur and Albert grow from young boys into teenagers who were beginning to show hints of the men they would become. Arthur developed into a natural leader with a gift for strategy and charm that would serve him well in either military or political life. Albert became increasingly scholarly, devouring books on natural philosophy and mathematics with an insatiable curiosity. Both boys loved their father and looked forward to his visits. But Rebecca remained distant. She was polite during Ronald's stays in Whitfield. She prepared meals and made pleasant conversation, and ensured the boys spent quality time with their father. But the walls she had built between herself and Ronald never came down. She never touched him beyond brief handshakes, never allowed herself to be alone with him in a room, or never let her guard drop even for a moment. And Ronald understood that she never would. On Arthur and Albert's 12th birthday, Ronald brought them to Blackthorn Hall for the first time. The boys stood in the entrance hall, staring up at the vaulted ceilings and marble columns with awe. This was their heritage, their birthright, the estate they would inherit when Ronald died. But it felt hollow without Rebecca. Ronald took them through the halls, showing them portraits of ancestors and explaining the history of various rooms. He introduced them to the senior staff, who would someday answer to them as dukes. He let them explore the grounds and the stables and the extensive library. That evening, after the boys had gone to bed in guest chambers prepared specifically for them, Ronald sat alone in his study. But the room had changed little since the night he made his terrible decision. The same mahogany desk, the same leather chairs, the same portrait of his father staring down from the wall with painted disapproval. But one thing was different. On the wall opposite the desk, Ronald had hung a portrait of Rebecca. He had commissioned it secretly, working from his memories and a single sketch an artist had made during their courtship. The painting showed Rebecca as she had been during their marriage, young, beautiful, hopeful, before he destroyed everything. Ronald sat in his chair and stared at the portrait while the house settled into nighttime quiet around him. "They are good boys," he said to the painted image. "You raised them perfectly. They are everything I hoped they would be." The portrait did not respond. It never did. "Oh, I thought time would make this easier," Ronald continued. "I thought eventually I would accept what I destroyed and move forward. But it has been 12 years, and I still wake up reaching for you. I still walk into rooms expecting to see you there. I still love you exactly as much as I did the day we married." Silence filled the study. "The boys asked today why you do not visit Blackthorn Hall with them," Ronald said. "I told them you prefer Whitfield, that you are not comfortable in aristocratic settings anymore. They seem to accept that explanation." He paused. "I could not tell them the truth, that their mother cannot bear to be in the place where her husband betrayed her. That every stone in these walls reminds her of the night I destroyed our family. That she will never return here because this house represents everything she lost." Ronald stood and walked to the portrait. He touched the painted canvas gently, his fingers tracing the line of Rebecca's smile. "I have become the Duke of Waiting," he said quietly. "I wait for visits from my sons. I wait for brief moments of courtesy from their mother. I wait for a forgiveness that will never come. And somehow I cannot stop waiting." Outside, an owl called through the darkness. Ronald returned to his desk and pulled out a letter he had written, but never sent. He had written hundreds of these over the years, letters to Rebecca expressing everything he could not say during his careful, chaperoned visits to Whitfield. None of them had ever been mailed. He added a new paragraph. "The boys are asleep upstairs in Blackthorn Hall tonight, and their presence fills this empty estate with life it has not known in 12 years. They laugh in the corridors where you once walked. They run through rooms where we once danced.
They bring joy to a place that has known only grief since you left. But you are not here. You will never be here. And Blackthorn Hall will remain a beautiful, empty monument to the life I destroyed. I love you still. I will always love you, even if you can never love me again. Ronald folded the letter and placed it with all the others in a locked drawer of his desk. Some day, perhaps, Arthur and Albert would find them, would read them, would understand the magnitude of what their father had destroyed and spent his entire life grieving. Or perhaps the letters would simply burn with the rest of Blackthorn Hall when Ronald was gone. It did not matter. But nothing really mattered, except the truth Ronald had learned too late. Some mistakes cannot be undone. Some wounds cannot be healed. Some loves endure forever precisely because they arrived too late to save what they destroyed. Thank you for watching this emotional journey of love, loss, and second chances. If Rebecca and Ronald's story touched your heart, please show your support by giving this video a like. It truly helps us continue bringing you these powerful narratives. Do not forget to subscribe and turn on notifications so you never miss our next story. We have more heartbreaking Duke romances, hidden heir dramas, and aristocratic tales coming your way. And we would love to hear from you in the comments below. Tell us where in the world you are watching from and what you thought about Rebecca's choice. Would you have forgiven Ronald? Did he deserve a second chance? Share your thoughts with our community. Until next time, remember that some love stories are not about perfect beginnings, but about the courage to rebuild after everything falls apart.